Edward Rushton was the radical, campaigning, blind poet of Liverpool. His life spanned the 18th and 19th centuries at the time of the slave trade, of revolution, and of social upheaval. Forgotten Hero, written by Bill Hunter and narrated by George Sefton, is his story.
Chapter 19, Democracy and Parliamentary Reform. In the decade following the French Revolution in England, there was repression and persecution of radicals struggling for parliamentary reform in Britain, also against those who fought against the oppression in Ireland, those who formed unions, and those who supported the French Revolution. Rushton spoke out as boldly on these issues as he did on slavery. The mass of the population in the 17th century did not have democratic rights. There was for them neither parliamentary nor local government suffrage. A small clique of big landowners, merchants and financiers governed Britain. The right to nominate members of parliament was openly bought and sold. The franchise varied from town to town, as did the constituencies. Manchester and Leeds had no representation, while the notorious seat of Old Sarum, which was only a thorn bush and a tumble-down farm, had two MPs. There was a growth of radicalism and a great ferment in Britain from the end of the 1780s into the 19th century. Organised movements for reform grew rapidly throughout the country. 1792 was a year of big demonstrations. The London Corresponding Society was formed when 9 men met in the Bell, a tavern off the Strand, in January 1792. They decided to form a society for parliamentary reform, with members paying a penny a week. The high tide of agitation lasted 5 years, from 1792 to 6. It was not an agitation about France, although French events both inspired and bedeviled it. It was an English demonstration of impressive dimensions for an English democracy. Working people in villages and towns over the whole country were claiming general rights for themselves, and it was this that threw the property classes into panic. There was a royal proclamation on seditious writing on the 21st of May 1792. Then, in December, the Liverpool Corporation addressed the King on his proclamation and expressed firm allegiance to him. The government carried out the most vicious prosecution against those demanding the vote, parliamentary reform and equality. In August 1793, there was a trial of Scottish leaders for treason. Cole and Postgate comment that the evidence, except the evidence of opinion, was negligible. Radical leaders in England and Scotland were sentenced to transportation, which, in the popular imagination, was a sentence only 1 degree less terrifying than a sentence of death. The enforced voyage to Australia occupied many months round the Cape of Good Hope and through the Indian Ocean.
If the convicts were free of chains, it was exclusively by special kindness of the commander, a kindness extended only to favoured criminals. The mere journey would be regarded by a modern sailor as an appalling hardship. In an 18th century sailing ship, which would seem to him a mere walnut shell, without ventilation and sanitation, and fed upon rations which convicts received, it is doubtful he would survive it. Certainly, a death rate of 20% among the convicts was nothing out of the ordinary. Their duty was to clear the bush and perform all the hardest and most menial work. For a failure, or imagined failure, they were liable to be flogged, and often were flogged. Sometimes, when they were working in the chained gangs, one of them would die in the heat of the sun. The corpse would remain chained to its fellows until nightfall, for an earlier release was impossible.
In 1794, the Attorney General claimed that it was high treason for any man to agitate for the establishment of representative government, the direct contrary of the government which is established here. In May 1794, the leaders of the London Corresponding Society were arrested, together with the leaders of the London Constitutional Society. habeas corpus was suspended. Committee members of corresponding societies in Norwich, Sheffield and other towns were arrested and indicted for conspiracy. The leaders in London were tried on a charge of high treason, which could have meant beheading. However, there was great public support for them. The streets around the Old Bailey were packed with excited crowds supporting an acquittal. The jury declared them not guilty. The London Corresponding Society had its support in Lancashire. E.P. Thompson tells us that although its strength was mainly amongst Irish labourers on the Thames, it was also alleged to have no fewer than 50 divisions in Liverpool and Manchester, with further divisions in the south-east Lancashire weaving villages. In Manchester, some success was gained in penetrating the army, where oaths were administered to members of the Light Dragoons. A significant feature of the Liverpool Williamson's Weekly Advertiser about this period is the number of notices of army deserters which appear regularly on its front pages and which ask for assistance in recovering them. In October 1795, the King went, in state, to open Parliament. His carriage was pelted and chased by crowds who hissed, hooted and shouted, "Down with Pitt! No war! No king! No Pitt! Peace!" Perhaps 200,000 Londoners thronged the streets. Some brandished small loaves on sticks, decorated with black crepe. A hawker in the crowd selling the rights of man for a penny was taken in custody, rescued and cheered in triumph. By 1799, nearly all the old leaders of the London Corresponding Society and the United Englishmen were in jail or in exile. One of the leaders, Thomas Evans, by his own account, was confined many months in a cell, with the accommodation of a bog of straw, a blanket, a rug, denied books, pen, ink, paper, candles, and much of the time access to fire. His house was seized by the Bow magistrates, and his wife and baby confined. He was held for 2 years and 11 months. At this time, Rushton found himself a marked man, according to the Reverend Shepherd. Rushton and William Shepherd were supporters of parliamentary reform, and, says F.E. Sanderson, Shepherd had a strong sense of political commitment. He stayed in London during the arrest and trial of Jeremiah Joyce, who was charged with treason, alongside Horne Tooke and Thomas Hardy, and he visited the Reverend Gilbert Wakefield, who was imprisoned at Dorchester for sedition in 1799 to 1800, in order, so he said, to become familiar with prison conditions before it was his turn to suffer. Rushton and his friends ran a dinner for John Binns, the chairman of the London Corresponding Society, who had led some of its very large demonstrations. As well as being a member of the LCS, he was a member of the United Englishmen, who were closely connected with the United Irishmen. In 1797, Binns was arrested and acquitted by a London jury. At the beginning of the 1790s, Rushton had opened a bookshop in Paradise Street in Liverpool, where he sold radical books. He was involved in countless conflicts with authority and local opinion. Sanderson writes, "Probably his blindness saved him from persecution, for he made no secret of his position." So also, 130 years before, the blind Milton escaped when the regicides were being executed under the Restoration. Historian Christopher Hill tells us that, just as the return of a free parliament brought a renewal of religious persecution, so the restoration of monarchy brought back the hideously barbaric cruelties of execution for treason. Many of Milton's friends were hanged, disembowelled and quartered. He had to go into hiding whilst the like fate was discussed for him. He was arrested and imprisoned, but escaped a traitor's sentence. Because it did not happen, we tend to forget how likely it seemed in all human probability. Milton had publicly advocated the accountability of kings immediately after Charles I's trial, and had defended regicide in the face of all Europe. In 1659 to 60, when so many of the king's former enemies lay low, Milton proclaimed his republicanism from the housetops. Nor was he forgotten at the Restoration. How could he have been? How Milton escaped, we do not know. Likewise, how Rushton escaped, we do not know.